is Finn and Lila's Natural History and Horse Podcast. In this episode, Finn will discuss caring for birds and reptiles, while Lila chooses the topic, well, somewhat related, of caring for horses. At the end, we'll have a surprise bonus of a book reading, as one of our additional formats discussed in a previous episode. Finn and Lila's Natural History and Horse Podcast. So, I'll leave it to Lila, and she will discuss what she has come here to tell you all.
So, I used to take riding lessons, and today I'll tell you a bit about what I learned. So, first thing you need to do is hook the horse up to, well, get the horse out of the stall and hook it up to, I forget what they're called, but...
Hitching post?
No.
Okay. It's like it is a hitching post, technically, but...
It's like these things that come and hit, like, clip onto the, like, halter.
Okay, so it's a thing to hold your horse with posts on either side.
Yeah. Well, it connects to the walls, and, like, it keeps your horse still. So, that's...
Blinkers? No. Okay, whatever.
So, that's the first thing you need to do. Then you need to get a curry comb, and...
Describe to them what a curry comb is.
So, a curry comb is sort of like the shape of your hand, only more like an oval. And it has, like, a strap on the top, and you slip your fingers through, not including your thumb. And you brush in circles. And so you brush in circles and like, brush it, yeah. So you brush in circles with the curry comb. Then the second thing you do is, there's another kind of brush, I forget what it's called, but you also do that, and you brush that the way that the hair goes.
So the curry comb is to make the hair go a certain way.
Yeah.
And then the other brush is to, just kind of perfect the original design of what way you want the hair to go.
Well, the curry comb is more, like, to get the dust off, I think. Okay. All the dirt and stuff.
So that you can do it and not, yeah, like, get tangled up, I guess.
Yeah,
okay.
So...
that makes sense.
I'm not gonna tell you the last thing yet. So, and then you need to get a saddle blanket, and you put that on top.
Sorry, what's a saddle blanket?
So, a saddle blanket, I'm not even sure if that's what it's called, but I think that's what it's called.
By the way, if you're riding a horse, you probably know all of this, so sorry for the interruptions. But for those of you who aren't horse riders and just listen to this to gain knowledge on whatever topic, please describe what a saddle blanket is.
So, a saddle blanket is sort of like, a blanket, but, like, so you drape it over the horse's back, kind of near the withers.
Mm-hmm. And the withers are, like, the hindquarters?
No. The withers are, like, where it really starts to slope, but isn't really sloping yet at the neck.
Okay, so it's like if you cut it off at the neck. Yeah. That's where the withers are.
Yeah, so okay. If you cut off the neck...
So when they talk about their horse's height at the shoulder, that's their withers.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like, their withers is, like, the back...
Okay, like, so right, it's, like, right here.
Yeah, it's, like, right...
Where the neck meets the shoulder.
Yes.
Or where the neck meets the back. Okay.
Yeah. So, and... So a saddle blanket goes there, and it... I think it, like, protects the horse from the saddle.
Yeah, so it doesn't, like, rub against it.
Yes, and so it's kinda the saddle, like, could probably seriously hurt the horse.
So it's kind of like a layer of protective elastic. against something harder.
It's like if you were sleeping on a hard bed, then you would want like a couple of blankets. It's sort of like that, only the horse only needs one blanket.
Okay, that's a pretty good comparison, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a soft layer to go on top of something hard to make it more comfortable.
Yeah.
So you don't feel it as much. It's kind of just in reverse, I guess.
Yeah.
For the settle, anyway.
Yeah. So, and then you need to put the saddle on. So, by the way, I warn you, if you have never picked up a saddle, it is very heavy. I have.
Okay, so saddles are very heavy. You should probably
get someone else to do it.
Yeah.
But most of the time, I didn't have to. My trainer did. But sometimes, I did. So, and they're heavy. But most of the time, she came over and helped me.
Okay.
And so, then, you need to get a girth. So, a girth is what keeps the saddle on the back, on the horse's back. Because if you just put a saddle on and climbed on, you would fall on your bottom. And
so the girth basically goes around the horse's stomach.
Yes, it goes around the horse's stomach and keeps the saddle on the back, and it keeps it from slipping.
I feel like I've seen that like attached to the reins or something, the saddle. Is it? Or
the saddle attached to the reins?
Yeah, the saddle or something like that. Like, do the reins go through the saddle or?
No, they don't.
Okay.
Oh, I think what you've seen is, well, no, not that. I'm not sure where you saw that, but yeah.
But they do not.
No, they do not.
Okay.
So, then you need the bridle, I think. Might be bridle. Mom's always correcting me on the pronunciation of that.
There's something called a bridle?
Yeah.
But I've never heard of a bridle. So is like brittle and bridle two different things?
I'm not sure. What do you think a bridle is?
Well, I imagine the bridle is like going over the horse's head or something.
Yeah, it's sort of like a halter, but more detailed, and it's for riding.
Okay.
The halter is just like if it's out in the pasture.
Okay. So what would you need a halter for?
A halter is like so that you can. So it's sort of like to, like if your horse ran loose and you needed to catch it, then you would want it to have a halter because you can't catch a horse if it has nothing on it for you to touch.
So it's kind of like with a dog. If your dog gets loose, you want a collar on it.
Yeah.
One, so people can identify, but also you can grab hold of the collar and stop the dog. Okay. So it's that kind of a thing.
And also, if your horse ran off and you need to go catch it and you caught up to it, you can't just hug it around the neck and keep it still.
Right.
Or
hold horses it are pretty big.
Yeah.
For those of you who did not know, unless you're talking about Shetland ponies,
in
which case they're like Labrador size.
Yeah, but
they're like Lyle-sized.
Lyle-sized-ish. Thanks a lot.
Back to Lila.
And by the way, they don't even know how tall I am.
That's true. She's moderately tall. I think she's like 3 feet.
No.
Oh.
Dude, I'm like 4'5".
Oh. Okay. Oh, yeah, because I'm like 4'9". Okay. Yeah. Continue.
So a bridle, like, it has a strap that goes, like, under your chin. Under the horse's chin, really. And it's sort of like a strap that goes on your, the strap that goes under your chin when you put on your bike helmet. It's a fairly good comparison. So, yeah, and I'm not sure what that does, but I think it keeps it, like, in place, and, yeah. So, and then it has the crown, which goes on the forehead, like, right? If the crown was on you, then it would be, like, right before where your hair starts, where the growth of your hair starts.
Okay.
And then there's another part that's connected to the crown, and it goes behind the horse's ears.
Okay.
So, like...
But, how does all of... So, this is, like, the equipment necessary.
Yes. You do not need a saddle. You do not need... Like, if you were riding bareback, you wouldn't need a like, to ride, you don't need a saddle. You don't need a saddle pad.
Yeah.
But to ride, you... Unless you're really, 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 really good at riding, then you would definitely need a bridle.
Have you ever ridden bareback? And if so, what was it like?
Yes, I have ridden bareback. It's pretty fun. I do not believe I've ever gone faster. Well, I've never ridden faster. Well, yes, I have. Yes, I have, Lila. Yes, I have. I have ridden faster than a trot, but I have not ever ridden faster than a trot bareback. And it probably isn't that safe, either.
Okay, so a trot is the fastest you ever went.
Yes.
And have you only ridden bareback on one occasion? Or
I have ridden bareback on a couple of occasions. They were all when I had my lessons.
Okay.
So, and let's see, what else?
Right, so you're just talking about the crown and how there's a thing that goes behind the ears.
Yeah. So, sort of like the crown, only behind the ears.
Okay.
So, and then there's also a thing that goes, like, over the nose. Over the nose is not anything like your nose.
Right, it's kind of more like a...
It's more like a muzzle.
Yeah, it's more like an oval type shape. Horse's head in general is more like an oval type shape.
Yes, but...
Horses are built with ovals.
Yeah.
In case you didn't know, that's very obvious. Horses are built with ovals. Everything is built with ovals.
Oval
not
rectangles.
Cells. No cells. Of course, that's stupid. Why would there be cells? Who listens to mainstream science? Yeah, anyway. My sister probably got, like, 0% of that. Because I'm 3 years older than her. But, for those of you who actually pay attention to science, then probably got that.
So, yes, I did get none of that, but
I did get none of that.
I did not
whatever.
Get any of that.
I feel like that's...
Sorry, I did
something
not...
Something I'm missing here.
I did not get any of that.
Okay, so, continue.
So, it goes... It's sort of like if you made your nose and mouth kind of sink into one and be an oval and kind of be straight out or...
Just look up horse head, frankly.
Yeah, it's hard to describe.
If you don't know what a horse head looks like...
Look it up, please.
Yeah, just look it up, because...
Just for the sake of my brain, please.
Oh, your pitiful, pitiful brain.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, you actually didn't tell me about that. You're pitiful, you're pitiful. Anyway.
Yeah.
Moving on.
There's a strap that goes over that. And, like, yeah.
So it's basically one big interconnected network of wires. Or not wires, but...
Not wires, but, like, straps.
Straps. That holds the horse's head in place.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, not in place, but...
Well, like... Yeah.
Yeah. And then attached to one of those straps on the side, then... There's the reins.
And that's what you hold to control where the horse goes?
And by the way, I don't actually need reins.
Okay.
I have ridden without reins.
Have you ridden without reins more times than you have ridden bareback?
I don't know. It was a long time. Well, not a terribly long time, but I...
Okay, so you don't know.
Yeah, I do not know.
Okay.
And so I think that's all I have for that.
For the head or for how to ride a horse?
Not how to ride a horse, but how to dress a horse for riding.
Okay.
Well, not for horse.
So your horse is all saddled up.
Yeah.
Now, how do you ride it? And so, we just need, like, the bare bones. We don't need anything too fancy, just the basic stuff.
So first, you always mount and dismount on the left side.
Okay.
No idea why, but you always...
It probably has something to do with the way, like, horses are hitched up. Maybe, like, there's a post on, I don't know.
Yeah,
but
I really don't know.
You usually dismount on the left side.
You really need to dismount on the left side, I think. You usually walk on the left side of the horse when you're leading it, too.
Oh, so that would make sense, then.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it might have something to do with how well the horse can see you. I don't know.
Okay. But maybe, like, if it's... Okay.
Yeah. So, for riding, the main thing is that you always keep your heels down, no matter what speed you're going at, whatever.
What do you mean by heels down?
So, like, you need to, like, keep your toes pointed at the sky.
Okay.
Like you don't have to have it straight up.
Okay.
Because that would be really hard, but you can't have it with your toes facing down like everyone wants to do.
Okay.
Can
you describe why that is?
I believe it has something to do with balance.
Yeah, one possible reason would be, like, if your toes are pointing down, they might dig into the horse more.
No, I think it has something to do with... Oh! Got it! Maybe.
What do you think it is?
I think it's that, like, if you fall, like, it will... If you have your toes point... If you have your toes pointed down and your heels up, then...
Yeah.
I think you have a better chance of falling.
Wait, that sounds... If you have your toes pointed down and your...
Heels pointed up. Your heels are supposed to be pointed down.
Oh, okay. I'm like, wait, she's saying that the thing everybody wants to... that everybody should do makes you more likely to fall.
No.
Yeah, I'm thinking not.
Yeah, your heels... should be pointed down.
Okay.
It's a lot easier to do it pointed up, but you're not supposed to do it pointed up. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
So basically, like, if you've ever tried to walk on your heel,
yeah,
then that's how you do it.
Yeah. But you don't... Yeah. You just position your feet like you are going to walk on your heel.
Okay.
First.
Okay. Well, I would just try walking on our heels, you don't know. Just in case you don't know. So, yeah. So, again, on you need to keep your ears pointed down.
Heels pointed down. There's a special way to hold the reins. I'm not sure if I forget it or not. Let me see if I can...
You're not sure if you forget it or not. Well, I'm guessing you forgot it.
Sorry, I'm not sure if I remember it or not.
Okay.
I'm going to use a clothes hanger. It's a big clothes hanger. So, I know that sounds silly.
You'll have to describe it pretty well, because the audience, of course, cannot see the clothes hanger.
Yeah.
She has a clothes hanger.
Yeah, let me see if I can position my fingers right.
So, they're about even width apart.
Yeah, your three biggest fingers.
Okay, so three middle fingers. So the three middle fingers go over.
Yes.
Kind of curved.
Yes, and then, kind of making like a fist, only with only three middle fingers.
Okay.
And then your pinky goes under.
Okay.
And your thumb... like, goes on the side, sort of bottom, but more side.
So I have it right?
I'm not sure. I think you did.
So your pinky should point straight up. Then you'll have,
And it should be under the reins.
Okay. So it should be...
it should actually point, like, right forward.
Okay, so like
this. I was holding it like this, just because that's how
So it's goes. Like this.
Yes.
So you have your pinky aiming straight forward. Then three fingers. The first joint in the finger should be, all you could see. And that's just... And then it curls forward from there. And then you'll have kind of like, an L shape for your left side. Or a backwards L for your right side. With your thumb, and your thumb is pointing out. This is really uncomfortable, and this is probably why I don't ride horses.
It's a lot more comfortable when you're actually doing it.
That's probably true.
I remember, when I had ridden for a while, my hands actually started kind of hurting and aching.
Yeah.
But when you first get on the horse and hold the reins, it's not uncomfortable.
Okay. So it can get a little tiresome after a little bit. Yeah. But for just short little rides, it's pretty okay.
Yeah.
Right?
So. And then. Let me think. For trotting. Which none of you have ever trotted before. I'm sure some of you probably have.
Right.
You don't just sit there while the horse moves.
Sack of potatoes. Sack of potatoes.
Yeah, you don't just
bump
sit
on
there.
A log. Bump on a log.
Yeah, you do not.
To use my teacher's favorite expression.
You do not just sit there while the horse moves and carries you around. You have to sort of use. It's hard to keep your heels down when you're doing this. I know that from experience. But you have to push yourself up and down, up, down, up, down, up, down.
Okay.
Down, up, down, up.
Okay.
To the rhythm of the horse's feet.
Okay.
So you have to sort of be in unison with the horse's feet.
Okay.
It's a really good feeling. When you just go up, down, up, down.
Okay.
Really smooth.
So you get in the rhythm of the horse.
Yes.
Okay.
But it's actually fun when you do it smoothly.
Okay.
But when you're, going down, bump, bump.
Yeah.
Up the bump.
Is there a difference between, other than, the fact that your insides will probably turn green. Is there a difference between walking and trotting and cantering and galloping?
Yeah.
In how you respond.
Well, in walking you do not post, which is what going up and down means.
So in walking you can just sit there like a sack of potatoes, or alternatively a bump on a log. There's some balance to it.
Yeah, you still have to balance. You can't just
Okay, but you don't have to put as much effort into it.
No, you don't.
It's basically just natural balancing with the horse for that.
Yes.
And then trotting is the next stage up.
Well, the horse goes faster. I was terrified when I first started trotting.
Have you ever galloped?
No. I never learned to canter.
Okay. Yeah, I think you were just starting on that.
Yes, I had never actually grown confident in cantering.
Yeah.
When,
it's been a couple of months since you last had horse training, so.
I'm not going to go into the details of that, just because I'd really rather not.
Okay, so trotting, you have to do the balance, and you have to post, which is kind of an extension of.
And at the same time, you have to be steering the horse. And if you're jumping, you can jump when you're trotting.
Okay.
If you're doing jumps, then you have to get ready and do a certain position.
So there's more you have to do, but more you can do as you go up the four levels of horse movement, which are basically walking, trotting, cantering, and galloping.
Yeah.
And for those of you who don't know, a gallop in hoofed mammals is defined by all 4 feet off the ground at the same time. It is the freakiest thing in the world.
You've never even done it, dude.
No, but I've seen it. It is so weird. So, yeah.
It's sort of like the horses jumping with each step.
Yeah.
I've never done it either, because I never even learned the canter, which is right below it.
So, is there... So I guess you don't know much about cantering and galloping.
No, I don't.
I wouldn't imagine there's a whole lot more to it, except maybe you have to maintain your balance, I guess, more carefully.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to steer during walking as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you can't just keep the horse walking and just be looking at the scenery.
I mean, you probably can, but... You probably can just look at the scenery, but...
Yes, but you can't just...
But if you're following a trail or something and it splits, you can't just let the horse go straight forward.
Yeah, you can't just let the horse go...
Yeah. Okay.
Because then the horse would run into a bunch of things, and the horse would probably get killed. So would you.
Well, the horse is smarter than you are, in all reality.
True.
That horse knows what to do more than you do if you're in that situation. So it's not going to run itself into a tree.
But if that, by some miraculous occasion, did happen, both of you would probably be killed. Or seriously hurt.
Okay. So you do need to pay attention for all of them.
Yes.
But you need to pay slightly more attention as you go up.
Yes.
And you do need to control where you're going for all of them. And can you jump while walking?
No, you cannot.
Can you jump while galloping?
I see.
Okay.
From trotting and up, you can jump.
So basically it gets a little more difficult every time you go up.
It's sort of like this. A lot higher than that. It's the jumps are like this high.
Yeah. Okay.
If you're walking, you cannot go.
So you have to kind of build up to it.
Yeah, you have to build
both in your training and in momentum.
Yeah.
Okay. So in preparation and actually the actual moment of jumping.
Yeah.
Okay, is that all you have to say?
I'll hand it over to Finn.
Okay, that took a half hour. Probably getting kind of tired of this by now. So, I'll switch over to a different subject. And that is, how to take care of reptiles and birds. So, basically, I'll have three main talking points, for this. And they are, basically, and this is summing it up immensely. And one of my talking points, the first one, is actually every species and every individual and every difference is different. That's kind of obvious, but if you get a female leopard gecko, it's very different from getting a male Komodo dragon. That's like the extreme. But a South Atlantic male leopard gecko is different than a North Atlantic male leopard gecko. Those are examples. I don't know what the different... These are very general rules guidelines. They're not as in-depth as what Lila did, because it's a much smaller subject. I mean, horse riding is not a small subject either, but in terms of the bare bones of it, there's a lot more to go into. So, we'll be attempting to minimize that after the half-hour behemoth that is Lila's horse riding. So, by the way, this was planned to take about 15 minutes each. Yeah, no. So that's my first point. There's a big deal of variation in species, and then remember, this is also applying for birds. I have three cockatiels. I know by their personalities which one is doing what. If I let them out, and I open the door, and I see one cockatiel on the cage, and two others in the cage, or maybe one, like, kind of hanging on the door, I know the one on top of the cage is Pearl. I don't even have to look. Pearl is outgoing and really friendly with everyone.
Mm.
Katie kind of likes to stay in the cage, but Katie and Spangle are pretty shy, Spangle is kind of the big chubby one. Katie will kind of, she's really nervous, basically. Yeah. And Spangle, nothing upsets him, but he's not going out there and trying anything new. He's just kind of staying where he is and eats all the food. So, great to have personalities. And then, my other thing is, just a second. I actually need to, check my notes for a little bit. Okay, I found my notes. So, the other two things, and I'll be going into these in a lot more detail in a second, are, legality. Don't get anything illegal. Check with wherever you buy from. Make sure of the circumstances. Check the prices. Whatever. One of the biggest threats is the exotic pick trade, to a lot of species. So don't help it, basically. And then the other thing is extensive care. You can't just get a bird, find a cage, bring it home. There's a whole heck of a lot more. I prepared for these birds for about 3 months before their arrival. That was when we had to get all the food, we had to get the cage set up, we had to get the toys, we had to get the cockatiels for one. They were not easy to find. They're actually kind of rare, I guess. They're Pearl Lutino cockatiels, hence Pearl, and then Spangle, which are both named after their color patterns. Pearl and Spangled, respectively.
I named Katie.
Yeah, she named Katie. She could name the girl, as long as she helped me with cleaning out the cage, which we are working on.
You never said that to me.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I did.
So,
back to variation in species. We'll do extensive care first. Basically, with reptiles, you really need to research the individual reptile, going back to variation in species. And with birds, they're a little more general, but you do need to look into, cage size, food type, and all that. Legality, that one's fairly obvious. Consult your local laws, whatever. No pet Komodo dragons. Sorry. I mean, yeah. I don't know what the laws, but you get the idea. Just consult everything. And then also with that, the government has laws on exotic reptile control. The state has laws on exotic reptile control. Your city has laws on exotic reptile control. Your county probably has laws on exotic reptile control. So, basically, the idea is, the county takes precedent over the national. But as long as they don't interfere, you have to obey all of them. So you follow the lowest order of law. And that's county or city or whatever. It could even be neighborhood or down to what your landlord or apartment owner allows. I mean, it gets technical. And then species variation, species and individual variation. That's pretty obvious too. But just account for, just because, a book says that they'll be this, or even because this podcast says it'll be this way, the endless disclaimer of pretty much every educational bird thing ever. The birds will not behave exactly like what we say. Every bird is different. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, you get it, you get it. And then with reptiles, the extensive care is really the big thing. Like, they need heat lamps, they need a water source. In some cases, they need, a very extensive water source. If you're talking about Brazilian snakes, like green anaconda. Well, first of all, why the heck are you keeping a green anaconda? And second of all, they need big cages. Also, there's a lot of things that can go wrong with reptiles that maybe can't as much for birds. If your baby little cockatiel gets out, I mean, obviously, it's not good for the baby cockatiel, and it's not good for you, but it's a lot different from if your 300-pound anaconda escapes in the middle of the night. You know, it's not as big an issue. That's just an example. I mean, we all feel sorry for your baby cockatiel and for you, but, it's not going to wreak havoc, basically. When I say escapes, I mean it, like, flew out of its cage or something. Look, these are just examples. There are a lot of technical reasons why that won't, can't, shouldn't happen. Those are just examples. So, without further ado, I will turn on the country music. Play that for about a few minutes. Go get some water. And then I'll come back to the boat. Just a second before we do our very special bonus, but in the meantime, I want to talk about, let's talk about what we're about to do now. So, this bonus, and the successive bonuses after, if this goes well, we'll be reading, animal series, mostly Warriors, Guardians of Ga'Hoole, and if you remember, this was one of the formats from the original episode that I discussed. I don't think it stuck. It didn't really fit well with the general idea of the episodes. But, I'll be doing these, from time to time, or however often I feel like it. And yeah. So, this is going to be Warriors Into the Wild. So, I'm going to, I'm going to close the door for a start. And I'm going to read what's on the back of the cover. So it says, "Fire alone can save our clan. Warriors, Book 1. For generations, four clans of wildcats have shared the forest according to the laws laid down by their warrior ancestors. But the Thunder Clan cats are in grave danger, and the sinister Shadow Clan cats, oh gosh, well, that's not stereotypical at all, grow stronger every day. Noble warriors are dying, and some deaths are more mysterious than others. In the midst of this turmoil appears an ordinary house cat named Rusty, who may turn out to be the bravest warrior of them all." Reviews. Action-packed adventure, certain to please any reader who has ever wondered what dreams of grandeur may haunt the family cat. Publishers Weekly. A suspenseful animal adventure that will leave readers eyeing puss a bit nervously. Kirkus Reviews. Keep watch for more adventures in the Warrior Saga. This is like a 5 series, with about 24 books. But this is the first series. There's 6 books. This is the first. And Lila has returned. And thus, as did... I'm joined by Lila here in our recording studio. And...
A.K.A. Finn's bedroom.
Yeah, A.K.A. Finn's bedroom.
Your bedroom.
So, my bedroom. We do not share a bedroom. We discussed that in a previous episode. So, we're not going into detail about that right now. So, chapter 1, the chapters don't have titles, they're just chapter 1, chapter 2, etc. Oh, sorry, I need to read the prologue. But, let me see how many chapters there are. Does it say? Does not. Something funny about these books, at the beginning they have, an allegiances section, where they describe, like, what all the cats belong to. In Thunder Clan, which is the main clan, has, like, 50 cats. And then Wind Clan has 1. River Clan has 2. Shadow Clan has maybe, like, 10. You know, it's there's definitely some, specialization going on here. You know, like, they just pick one clan and really focus on it. And here, that's Thunder Clan. So, prologue. Basically they're describing how beautiful the forest is, and then they say there's all these dark shapes in the rocks, unsheathed claws glinted in moonlight, wary eyes are flashing like amber. Look, it's night. How are they seeing wary eyes flashing like amber? Oh. Okay, that makes sense.
They're amber colored.
Sorry, it's actually a technical cat thing. Their eyes reflect light, basically. And then they're all fighting, and then a big dark cabbie pins this bracken-colored Tom, bracken is like dead leaves, and says, "Oakheart, how dare you hunt in our territory, and the Sunning Rocks belong to us, Thunder Clan. And then after tonight, Tiger Claw, this will be just another River Clan hunting ground," the cat he's jumped on says. And then they say, "Look out, more River Clan warriors are coming." And then she turns to see all these other cats sliding out of the river. River Clan is self-explanatorily. They're all watery. And then the dark tabby Tiger Claw says, "You may swim like otters, but you and your warriors do not belong in this forest." And then he goes and helps another Thunder Clan cat. And then he gets hurt. And then Tiger Claw, the yowl came from warrior with the tail as red as fox fur. This is useless. There are too many River Clan warriors. Tiger Claw just kind of defies him and rushes in. Red Tail persuades him otherwise. Tiger Claw is just like, shoot! So many missed opportunities. For more reasons than one. They retreat. And then, in a deserted clearing, this old cat looks at the sky. And she hears all these sleeping cats. Then a little tortoise shell emerges from a dark corner, like every mystical cat ever. And the gray she-cat says hello and asks about the cat that Tiger Claw helped. And they say they'll all recover. And then the your gifted medicine cat, Leaf, who's the name of the cat. And the old she-cat's name is Blue Star. And then she's really worried about it because they're beaten in their own territory, and it's a kind of a big problem, and they have very few cats, contrary to, like, the 20-plus list in the allegiances section. And Spotted Leaf says, you know, everything's okay. And then they have this, like, not argument, but discussion. And then they say, are you asking StarClan for answers? And then they say, yeah, I am. And then there's this shooting star. Blue Star is curious, but she holds her tongue. And then Spotted Leaf says, it was a message from StarClan, and that fire alone can save our clan. Blue Star is like, what the heck? Fire is gonna save our clan? She's like, yeah, okay, whatever.
And then, you've never been wrong before, Spotted Leaf. If Star Clan has spoken, it must be so. Fire will save our clan. And, sneak peek. Well, not really. But, here's another book called Blue Star's Prophecy. And, her book, in her book, someone called Goosefeather, who's the old medicine cat, says, Blue Star, you are fire. But even fire can be destroyed by water. So her prophecy is water is going to kill her, and she's fire. So she was probably pretty freaked out by that. Fire will save our clan. So she's like, I will save my clan? But I got warned of that like 200 years ago, because I'm this immortal cat. She's not really, but she's old, okay? She's old, okay? So they discuss Rusty hunting. Lila, why don't you end the conversation or something? So, actually, Lila will start commenting in a little bit once we hit page 12. We're currently on page 7. So, they talk about how Rusty... It's at night. It's very dark. It's an unfamiliar forest. He's chasing a mouse. He catches the mouse. The mouse gets away. Something's rattling in it. Makes him lose the mouse. And makes that mouse get away. It turns out... And it turns out he was dreaming. The rattle had been his food dish. He goes outside. The moon is bright. Whatever. He's nocturnal. He's a cat. So it's like... sort of... evening. Sort of when we're recording this podcast, actually. 7:23. It was raining lightly. He sits on top of the post. He's sniffing the air. He decides he doesn't want to go back inside. He just looks at the forest. He heads out to the forest. He talks to Smudge, who's a cat friend of his. And by the way, Rusty is like, he's a house cat. The cats we discussed before, Blue Star, Spotted Leaf, Tigerclaw, Oakheart, they live in the forest wild. Smudge is like, you're going into the woods? Gee whiz! They discuss the various merits and dismerits. Rusty gets kind of nervous. He starts to hunt a mouse. Something cracks. He sees a fox's tail. Okay, it's page 12 now, so... whatever. He smells something weird. Definitely a meat eater. It's a fox. Forgets about the mouse. Then he hears something else. It comes from behind, but it sounds far away. He thinks it might be paw steps, so footsteps. What do you think is behind him, Lila?
Well, depending on, like, how... depending on how loud the footsteps are, it would probably depend on how loud they are.
It came from behind, but it sounds like they're far away.
So maybe... could it be, like...
do you know what happens at all in this book series? Okay. Then you're at... actually, the listeners probably know more than you do, because I read them the stuff on the back of the book. Okay. You're forgiven for now.
For now.
So he's like, oh shoot, there's something behind me. And he hears it again, and then something hits him like an explosion. He goes into a clump of nettles, which stink, by the way.
I've been stung by nettles before. They
yeah.
hurt.
No
and
fun.
Mom and dad were like, oh, it's nothing at first, but then everyone, one by one, everyone got stung except Ben.
I was exceptionally lucky that day. So he's like, what the heck is going on? This thing is strong. He flips over onto his back so that it gets the breath knocked out of his opponent, and then he goes back to home. He just decides to turn and fight, and it's a kitten. Another kitten, because he is a kitten. Thick coat of shaggy gray fur, strong legs, and broad face. Who do you think this is now? Like, what are they?
What? Wait, the name.
You don't need to guess the name. But, like, the name is kind of obvious when you think about it.
Kitten?
No. Shaggy gray fur.
Oh. Shaggy? Gray?
Technically, it's gray paw. Great. Because they have a weird system of leadership and rank going on. It's basically an oligarchy in the clan, but... So, he knows it's a boy. Kitten runs smack dab into him. He's like, whatever. His attacker is like, whatever. I'll just lick myself. Then the attacker says, hi there, kitty pet. And you're a pretty good fighter. Kitty pet is what they call the house cats. It's kind of not a nice term. He's like, I'll fight you if you have to. And then he says, I'm Great Pa, by the way. Training to be a Thunder Clan warrior. That just gave it away. Do you even hear that?
No.
It said, I'm Great Pa and I'm training to be a Thunder Clan warrior. That gave away, like, the two things you need to know about him. I gave him. What's a kitty pet like you doing out in the woods? Don't you know it's dangerous? Then he's like, well, if you're the most dangerous thing the woods has to offer, then I think I can handle it. And he's just like, oh gosh, he's not, is he? And then Great Paw's like, oh, but I'm not. He's like, oh gosh, no. Then he says, if I was even half a warrior, I'd have given an intruder like you some real wounds to think about. And he says, it's not worth hurting you, which is like an insult, sort of not, because he's not from one of the other clans. They explain to them what the clans are. Four warrior clans to hunt around here. He belongs to Thunder Clan. Everyone else is trying to steal from them, especially Shadow Clan. When I read the back, it says, sinister Shadow Clan grows stronger every day. I was like, that's not stereotypical at all, sinister Shadow Clan. Yeah, right. So, yeah. So that's Shadow Clan. They're so fierce they would rip you to shreds, no questions asked. And remember, there's also River Clan, and then there's a last clan called Wind Clan. So, yeah. So, yeah. Then he's like, oh, but they have no right to us. It's unfair. I'll make them really scared when I grow up. And he's like, oh, shoot, this is one of the clan cats that Smudge told me about. He's the kitty pet he met before he left into the forest. And he says, I'm not a warrior. They explain the apprentice system, which will probably work out in the next episode. He says, why don't you become a kitty pet? He's like, no way, no way. Then he kind of teases him about being a kitty pet. Then he says, oh, shoot, there's other people from my clan coming. They won't want you here. Then he says, quick run, but too late. Someone comes out. It's the big gray she-cat who we talked about earlier. Her name's Blue Star. You remember her?
Yeah.
She was talking with Spotted Leaf.
Mm-hmm. I remember her.
She's just like, oh gosh, that's someone I need to be afraid of. And then there's another one, a golden tabby. Great Paw's like, yeah, I'll just kind of like slink down now. No, nothing to be afraid of. Nothing going on here. Nothing at all. he gets told off for being near the houses, so near humans. For any of you who have watched Rio or Rio 2, you're probably getting serious deja vu right now. Then he's like, oh, shoot. Firepaw, Rusty, no giving away names, Finn, no giving away names. It's like, oh boy, well, I'm in trouble now. For like the 11th time this chapter. Who do you think is the golden cat?
The golden...
He's with Blue Star. You only know 3 Quen cats so far, so you're kind of at a disadvantage, but...
Golden Star? Gold Star?
No, that's a good guess. There are like 10 different reasons why no. His name is Lionheart. And he's Graypaw's mentor, which means he's like his teacher, or his trainer. Okay. So he trains him to be a warrior. Right now he's not. And then Graypaw says, oh, he's just a 2-legged pet. And Rusty is like, just a 2-legged pet? How dare you? But then he sees Blue Star, and she's like, if you make one wrong move, he's like, okay, you know, just a 2-legged pet. Yeah, that's fine. I'm just a 2-legged pet. And then Graypaw introduces and tries to do it in a whisper, and then Lionheart is just like, thank you for the introduction. Now, back to business. Then Blue Star says, you fight well. Then she says she's been watching them both. How creepy is that? Then she congratulates Rusty. She says she's been watching him for a while, wondered when you'd come out here. Says he's really great at hunting. Lionheart is like, what the heck? You're looking at like a house cat? And then he says, but I've only come here to hunt for a mouse or two. I'm sure there's enough to go around. That was a bad thing to say. Why do you think that was a bad thing to say, Lila?
Because mice are hard to catch?
Yeah. They're, like, few and far between. And then Blue Star's like, there's never enough to go around. If you didn't live such a soft, overfed life, you would know that. Graypaw's like, oh, what have you gotten yourself into, kid? And by the way, they're both, like, babies. They're not, like, baby babies, but they're, like, children, kind of like us. And Rusty is like, oh gosh, these aren't my friends. These are not my friends. I must go. These people are going to tear me to shreds. And then that ends the chapter. So that's it. That was 58 minutes, 14-ish seconds. That'll be it. Whatever. Turn on the country music so we can, do this and all. From Finn. In my words, Natural History and Horse Podcast. See y'all!